Well, hello there. Good evening and welcome. This is Strong and Sassy on your superstation, Joy 99.7 FM. Thanking Jesus for another Wednesday for us to be here to be able to do this. And thanking you for tuning in and listening. We're always so glad that you choose us. We're also live on Facebook, just a gentle reminder. So, like I always say, the visuals are so much better. So if you're not driving and you're home, you know, catch us on social media. We'd love to be able to interact with you there as well. My name is Enimoa Enim Ado, and we will be doing this until 8 o'clock. So, for the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about abuse, the different forms of abuse, the mindset of the abuser, and even the mindset of the women who are being abused. We've talked about picking partners that are not good, picking the same kinds of partners over and over again because we are unhealed, and just a lot. You know, if you've missed any of it, like I said, Facebook never forgets. So yeah. But something interesting happened during the week. A friend reached out with a story of a lady. And the story was that this lady says that the way that she knows that her husband loves her is because he beats her and because he is abusive. She saw her father do the same to her mother, and apparently all of her sisters are also being beaten on the regular. But for all of them, it's normal, it's acceptable, and that's what love for them looks like. She said that when they got married at first, it wasn't like that. So she was married to a man who, like I said during Newsnight, was quiet, not very expressive. But during these bouts of or fits of anger, he would be expressive. He would be quite passionate. He would be shouting and saying, I love you, so this is why I'm doing this. I love you. Why do you make me do this? I love you. Why won't you behave? I love you. Why did you wear this? I love you. Why are you showing your body to the public? I love you. Why are you disgracing me? All of those things. And so he would affirm the violence with I love yous. And over time, it's become normal because even when she ran home and told her mom about it, her mom would say, well, you saw your dad do the same thing to me. I thought it was a story that was maybe 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 2,000 or 1 in 1,000,000 until a lot more other stories like that suddenly seem to come up, where there seems to be a section of women who think that being abused is love. So we wanted to talk about that tonight. Joining me for the first time, both my guests are first-timers, Strong and Sassy virgins, Melanie Asiedu, who's a clinical psychologist. Look, just go on Facebook and the visuals tonight are visualing. Like, just go and watch. Okay. And so, Melanie, hi, good evening and welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm so excited for this
The fancy fingers and rings, and I'm feeling the vibe, yes. Right? And thank also, Dr. Vanessa Mensah-Kabu, who obviously is a doctor. There's a lot of MBCs, PhD things.
That's medical doctor.
Yes, and she's
masters
also
in public health.
Okay, there we are. And she's also the founder of First Aid on Wheels. Yeah. Thank you so much, Doc, for being here tonight.
Thank you, Enimoa, for having me.
So, what are your, Melanie? Let me start with you. Just your initial thoughts on the story.
It's not surprising.
Okay.
It's not surprising. It's not the first I'm hearing of such, like I was discussing earlier. Yeah, most women would think that abuse is love, that he has to beat me to show love. If he doesn't, then it's a problem. And it's interesting that you mentioned, so there's even a history of, okay, so your mother went through the same thing, your sisters are going through the same thing, most likely, who knows, even your friends may be going through the same thing. Yes, so it's not surprising, and it goes back to sometimes the socialization. So we are socialized as a culture to see women as weaker, to see women as less. So phrases like Beminsu is a common one we always reference. So men don't cry. You throw like a girl to insinuate that, okay, a man is stronger. Okay, so that socialization starts, and we need to understand that obviously learning, one of the ways we learn is by observation. Okay, so as a culture, if you've been socialized to say that, okay, your dad would beat your mom to show that he loves her, or to put her in her position. So if she does something, imagine if maybe, God forbid, she bends the rice. She's cooking, she bends the rice. And then a quick slap to correct her. As a kid, you are learning that to say that, okay, when I do something wrong, I have to be beaten to be corrected. So for this person, even from the childhood, that socialization started. And then now, obviously, she grows. God forbid, maybe some boyfriends did the same thing. Then in the mind, it's like, okay, I saw it at home. My mom endured it. She went through it. She was corrected by being hit. So I also have to go through the same thing. You have conversations with your siblings. They tell you that, oh, my boyfriend also beats me as well. So it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
So that learning starts from there. And then you internalize it. Because then now, that's what you've been taught. So that's almost all you know. So then if that's how come some women will say, they'll question, if my partner is not beating me, then he must not love me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's
where it comes from. Yes. Okay, all right, Vanessa.
Well, listening to the story, well, thank you, first of all, for having me on the show. And to everyone listening, thank you for tuning in and for watching. Listening to the story is actually quite heartbreaking. And the numbers of persons, not even just the women, some men also believe that have this ideology or mindset is quite staggering. Just as Melanie mentioned, I was doing a little bit of reading before I came onto the show, trying to get some research and understand some of the concept or the factors that are associated with this intimate partner and then sexual violence, which seems to be very common and predominant, especially in our parts of the world. Some of the factors, basically, they start at the individual, family, community, and the wider society levels. And that is unfortunately appalling. Just as Melanie mentioned, exposure during childhood is one of the key factors that people tend to have that mindset of. It not only perpetuates, but it also creates that experience in that child who tends to grow up believing that that is the way things should go until they have at some point unlearned that trait.
Yeah.
So it's all about education, awareness, trying to understand the foundation of why this mentality is so. And for the men who grow up into abusers, they've also been exposed, unfortunately, to that kind of behavior. And that is the risk or the complication associated with intimate partner and then sexual violence in the home, because exposure to the children would only lead the men, that is the male kids,
the boys,
into perpetrators or abusers, and the women or the girls into victims, because they believe that is how things should be, whereas it's rather the opposite. If you grow up in an environment or a society that enables these kinds of behaviors, you're only going to grow up thinking that is how it should be. You are used to that. It's almost as if you know that tomatoes should be cut in a certain way.
Yeah.
You would grow up doing that until you learn a different way to do it or understand that, okay, this can be done differently, or how I have been doing it is not how it's supposed to be done. So it's about unlearning these traits and also creating and holding safe spaces for persons who wish to speak up. Just because you went through it does not mean that someone else should go through it.
Yeah.
We don't create that enabling environment for victims to speak up. And that also is one of the key reasons why many people believe that it is so. So it's a whole thing that needs to be addressed. Yeah. And I believe in the past 2 weeks, some of these issues were discussed. You know, the community level, what is our outlook or our mindset on abuse? And we need to understand that abuse is not just domestic physical. Some people think that unless there is physical abuse, then it's not abuse. That is completely not the case. And even when it is physical, depending on the severity of the abuse, then it is not abuse. There's six different types of abuse. That is psychological abuse, sexual harassment, the intimate partner and sexual violence, several of them. And these are all forms of abuse. Verbal abuse, where you insult people, psychological abuse, where you manipulate, you gaslight, you just basically twist and turn the mind of the victim. How do we understand, or how do we go about solving the problems, creating safe spaces for people and helping them to be able to come out of that victim and then abuser mindset? Because some people really, in fact, all the persons involved need help. And we have to be able to provide the help for them. But we can't provide the help for them until we admit that it is a problem. So as a community and a wider society level, it's important that we admit that this is a problem. Because there is a socioeconomic rippling effect of the abuse, not just the victim, but the abuser also. So it's something that needs to be thoroughly looked into and then addressed.
I mean, it's interesting how we don't want, I think a section of society doesn't actually want to accept that it's a problem, you know. And over the past 2 weeks, a lot of the conversations that we've had, you know, is how when people who are abused go back and tell their parents, it's like, you know, it's not a big deal, it's not this, it's not that, it's not that. But there's another aspect of this that I want to talk about. Let me start with you, Melanie, again. You know, we talk about the fact that, okay, you saw it being done to your mom and all of that. There are also people who come from a very loving family where they saw their fathers really respect their moms, you know. But when they get into relationships and they're being abused, somehow there's like this savior complex. You know, one of our guests talked about that, the fact that it's like, oh, I think I'm the only person that can save him. And all of that. I mean, do you see that often, you know, in your work? And how do we manage to use that as a reason to say, you know, I don't know, like maybe, you know, this relationship is a calling from God and, you know, I'm his Jesus. And do you get what I mean?
I get what you mean. That's there. And an explanation for that could be, so there's this thing, trauma bonding.
Okay.
Where you connect with the perpetrator, basically the person who's causing you harm, on maybe one trauma you both have gone through or the other. So it may not necessarily be that, okay, you are from an abusive home, or even that person is also from an abusive home, but you've just connected on one trauma or the other and you're connected in that way. Another explanation, unfortunately, is the fact that, so the abuse cycle, so there's a phase where there's like a lot of love that is given,
the love bombing.
Yes. So they'll shower you with gifts, they'll be nice, they'll sweet talk you and all of that. And even after the abuse occurs, afterwards they would still be that sweet and caring. Who gives gifts to their enemies? Do you get it? So that
it's psychological,
yes, that thing is there in the mind where, okay, this person actually loves me. Because funny thing is, as you're even hitting you, they're telling you, oh, I'm beating you because I love you, you know, you did this, that's why. And then afterwards they buy you gifts, they buy you flowers and all that. So it's like, okay, he said he loves me and he's showing me, so they'll that connection is there. And then yes, the savior complex of you identify that, okay, maybe this person is troubled and I'm the only person who can help. That's also there. It's something, yes, it's true. It's something that we actually see. And obviously, for us, though, most of the reasons why we see people staying is, one, for the children. When there are children involved, it's very difficult for the women to leave. And the truth is, our society is not built to support survivors of gender-based violence.
Okay.
It's not. Okay, I listened to Mimi's
segment.
Yes, and I love how she was talking about, okay, so plan, make a plan and leave, make a plan and leave. One of my first thoughts was, okay, in that space of 2 years where you're planning, you could literally die. Okay, and not every woman has the luxury to even make the plan. For some, yes, you're staying because the marriage is all they have. They have nothing to go back to. Because, yes, maybe you go home, your mother will say, okay, go back and sit in the marriage. Okay, aside that, the financial aspect cannot be ignored. So the person steps out of the marriage, they can't go home. Where are they going? Ideally, there should be shelters around. Yes, we have in the hospitals, we work with social workers a lot, but come
how
on
long?
Yes, and you should even see the structures. Yeah. You wouldn't want to leave your marriage to go to that. That's just the reality.
Wow. Okay.
So there's that first aid, that first point of call to say, okay, this man is beating me, I will die, I need to leave. Some women are actually strong enough to recognize that, but now you get her, where are you going? So then they'll stay.
You know, it makes me sad when I hear you know, women say that you know, like, he's beating me, I'm this, you know, the children, where am I going? Mm. And it makes me ask myself that, why do women give up so much of their power when they get married?
Yeah.
Or when they are in relationships?
Yeah.
Because I mean, do you want to answer? Like, do you have an idea why?
Well, I cannot speak for all women. So I wouldn't be able to give an accurate answer to that. However, what I can say is, we have so much made or valued a woman based on her marital status.
Mm.
And hence, for her to be able to come out of that environment, especially in a society that to a large extent enables these perpetrators, becomes very difficult. I mean, there are enough organizations or resources that are around to help support these, but how effective are they? I mean, we have the domestic violence and victim support unit, that's the DOFSU, which was once WAJU, which was set up all the way in 98. But if you look at the progress of that initiative or that resource that's supposed to provide a certain level of shelter for victims and also to hold perpetrators or abusers accountable, it's rather unfortunate to hear stories about a woman goes in to report that this is what she's going through, and maybe one of the officers in that area or has, you know, rather gone and then is staying with the husband of the person that she came to report about.
Mm-hmm.
So these do not make sure that women feel safe,
yeah,
or victims of sexual and gender-based violence openly speak to these issues. So it makes it very difficult for a woman who maybe is married and say that I'm going to leave the marriage because of maybe, like society will say, one or two slaps that your husband has given you to correct you, and so you're leaving. Also, that issue of victim blaming and victim shaming is one of the enablers or perpetrators of the continuity of sexual and gender-based violence, because you're just thinking, you ask, okay, my husband slapped me, or my husband threw something at me,
yeah,
and so I'm hurt, or my husband does not give me money when he's upset, or he doesn't do this or that when he's upset. And you go and report, and then the question asked is, okay, what did you do? Why did you do that? If you hadn't done it, maybe things would have. You know, we need to change our entire mindset so to create a safe environment, not just for women, but all victims involved in this sort of sexual and gender-based violence. So it's a mindset thing. As a society, as individuals, as family members in a community, we all have that burden to ensure that each and every individual in the community is safe. The victim blaming, the stigmatization that is associated, also shame. It's very difficult for a person to feel like, okay, this is someone that I have shown to the whole world that is the best thing in the world. How then am I going to come out and say that this person has been abusing me? You would come out with all of these, and it's almost as though you're just wondering, how is it going to be accepted in society? And what I would say to that is, it is your story, and nobody is going to experience it better than you have.
Yeah.
And the other concern or the other issue is, you have people coming out, people bold enough to come out and then talk about these issues, and then you have other people saying, oh, I know this person, he's not like that.
Yeah.
And that is something that needs to be critically addressed. I am of the opinion and of the view that we all experience people differently.
Yeah.
And just because you have experienced person A in a certain manner, that's not in any way invalidate my experience with that person.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we need to have that safe space or create that safe room for people or for victims involved with sexual and gender-based violence to speak up. We need our resources to do much better. We need ourselves as society to do much better. And we always think that, oh, as for society, they ask for society there. But we forget that we are society.
Yeah.
We make up society. What are we doing in our own little way to ensure that it's safe for individuals? Yes, there are children involved, but then these children that grow up in an environment like that only grow up to either be victims or abusers themselves.
Yeah.
So it's a very big thing that needs to be significantly and critically addressed. So
I still don't feel like you actually...
Please, if you have some thoughts, you can share.
I mean, everything that you said is legit.
I agree.
But... So I'm asking and I'll ask again, why do women get to that point in their lives? And maybe it's unfair to ask you guys, because maybe you haven't gotten to that point. Do you know what I mean?
So that's what I would say is, you don't need to have experienced something to be empathetic.
I was giving you a way out.
Oh, no. Because that is a very easy way out and a way to say that. Then we wouldn't be speaking on certain issues.
Yeah.
It's almost as if, okay, I'm not going to talk about rape because I've not been
raped.
I've never been.
Okay, so
but
can
I don't
ask
need
my
to have experience.
Okay.
That
so the question
to hold
is
space
so for people who have been raped. I toast together.
No, just generally.
Okay.
Yes.
So the question is, why do you guys feel that sometimes when women get married, they give up so much of their power to the point where they'll say, I don't have anywhere to go? Yeah. I mean, it depends.
Okay.
They're different dynamics. So, you know, maybe you didn't have, you enter the marriage and it's the man who's always had the money, you know, but maybe you've been working. Maybe you were working. You got married and you were working. You were working in a bank. And so then right now you're saying I don't have anywhere.
Okay, so I think I get the picture now. So women have different phases of life. A woman who gets married at some point is going to get pregnant. And during that course of the pregnancy, there are several complications associated with it. There's the period of pregnancy, and then there's postpartum, that is after delivery. That is going to be maybe 1 to 2 years of their lives where they would probably not be doing anything to bring in any form of income. So that also is a factor where women tend to feel a certain level of way where they cannot get out of that situation, because then... during that period, who is going to be providing for the family? It's definitely going to be the man that's going to be making that provision. And then also, some women who, like the gender inequalities that we experience, girls are not being sent to school. And so the rippling effect of that is they don't have the opportunities in the job market as compared to the men. They are not properly equipped in terms of skill and knowledge and... literacy to be able to get a certain level of jobs. The opportunities for women are more limited as compared to men. So these are some of the reasons. Like, there's just naturally or societally that the word is not societally.
No, we get it.
I mean,
okay,
you get it. Yes, that inequality or imbalance that puts women at the losing end, or who women get the lower end of the stick, the shorter end of the stick as compared to the men. So naturally it creates that sort of imbalance and then of power. So you get into a marriage, you are not making as much as your husband. There's bills that need to be paid. So there's going to be that level of feeling, that God complex feeling from the man, who would feel, maybe I'm the one providing for all of this. And when you don't come from a place where there is that safety to know that some of these actions are not done, you feel like your wife is supposed to, you treat your wife like a child, hence the corrective means of striking her, verbally abusing her, financially abusing her, just so that she can act right. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the reasons, the inequalities that women face, and then also the disparities in physiology, where women get to that stage where maybe there's pregnancy or there's
children.
Exactly.
Okay, Melanie, what do you mean?
It's a lot, but another thing I want to address is
on the same question before you move to some. Because you people are just like free range.
The cycle of abuse in itself keeps them there. Okay. One part of the cycle of abuse is the financial aspect. Mm. Okay, so I actually have a case study I want to share. A client that we saw. This woman initially. Obviously, Dovsu refers and all of that. Mm-hmm. She comes in, we hear her story. We decide, okay, let's bring the man in to hear his side as well. This man comes, he cries, plays the victim very nicely for us and all of that. Paints the woman like this irresponsible woman. She doesn't work, always going out with friends, only interested in clothes, dressing, you know, all of that. So now, we are questioning ourselves like, hey, the story the woman gave, was that accurate, blah blah blah. We call the woman back in again and we see the loopholes and the lies and what the man was basically saying. This woman is a master's degree holder.
She has a okay.
Like she was working, financially stable, doing business on the side, like a whole lot. She wasn't this irresponsible person
like
the
said.
Man was painting. Okay. She lost all of those things because of the man. Because whilst in the marriage, you give the impression, okay, so maybe like Vanessa mentioned, you give birth, you have to take a certain break from work. Yeah. Then he's like, oh, you don't need to go back. You just stay home and take care of the kids. Mm-hmm. While someone has to do it, it will cost more to pay for somebody to come. Or I don't trust this your cousin or whoever you want to bring into the house. So then you stay home. Eventually, she managed to get, because she had the master's, she managed to get, try not to give too much information, but she managed to get like a job as an adjunct lecturer in one of these universities, sabotaged that job as well. Managed to get a job even in the church, because now, and now that's another thing, we haven't even spoken about the role the church plays in this whole cycle, but the church was aware because of marriage counseling or whatever, so the church tried to support her with the job, sabotaged that as well, went to the church, went to display and all of that.
Oh wow.
So they keep you wanting them, or not even wanting, they keep you needing them
financially.
Yes. So most women, when they say, okay, I have to make a plan before I leave, or they say I have nowhere to go, not necessarily because maybe they're from abusive women, the mother is sucking them back, or they themselves are not financially stable. As part of the abusive cycle, that financial dependence is created. So somebody with a master's degree, she was working, I can't mention that, but you know, she was financially stable. But as a consequence of the abuse, now she was left with nothing. Mm-hmm. And she was reduced to being a mother. And that's why it started with the socialization, because a woman would easily accept that, because from when you're a child, they'll buy you kitchen sets. They'll tie a doll at your back. We are socialized that, okay, women are meant to be in the kitchen. Women are meant to be nurturing. Women are meant to be mothers, which is fine. But they don't add the other aspects of, okay, you can be a doctor, you can be a psychologist, you can be a journalist, you know, and those things would bring you money. And in this economy, trust me, double income household is very much necessary.
Yeah.
Do you get it? But because, again, we are socialized in these the socialization is just about the social norms. Okay, so what they say a woman is supposed to do and what a man is supposed to do. That's the socialization I'm talking about. So that's ingrained in your mind that, okay, a woman is supposed to do this. So when you get married, you are your own woman, you get married, but then your husband will make certain recommendations. You accept it. The love.
I like the way you call it recommendations.
Yeah.
Yes. Husband will make recommendations. Yeah.
You accept, of course, yes, when you love him, nobody enters a relationship with the mindset of it's going to end. Mm-hmm. So you accept it. They portray it like it's for the good of the family. So if your husband says, okay, you've given birth and maybe after 1 year or something, you want to go back into work, and you say, oh no, just stay home, take care of the kids, somebody needs to do it, I don't want a stranger raising our kids, you would accept that because it makes logical sense in the moment. But it's a cycle they are creating. They create that financial dependence on them. And not just the financial, even socially, most of the time they'll withdraw you from your family, your friends. So this example I was mentioning, the church, so much embarrassment, preventing family members from coming to visit, preventing friends. They will start by, oh, this friend is a bad influence. Can you imagine if your partner tells you that, oh, this friend is a bad influence? You will take it.
I mean, yeah.
You will take it.
Even just so that there's no fighting.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But then they are slowly withdrawing you and putting you in that state of dependence where you need them. So for many women, yes, sometimes it comes to recognition that this is abuse, this is not love, I want to go. But again, like I was saying, they have nowhere to go. So that financial dependence cannot be ignored. It's part of the abusive cycle. So they feel stuck and they are there.
Wow. Yeah. I don't even know if there's a solution to that. So, I mean, is it like, okay, before you get married, you know, put money away in treasury bills and call this my if he ever abuses me fund, you know, because you don't go into a marriage or a relationship expecting that you're going to need. Yeah. Or should we go into, you know, marriages and relationships with a sense? I mean, the reason like I'm really focused on this is because I feel like it's like really one of the main issues in the conversations. Yeah. Why women find it difficult to leave, because it's like, you know, where do I go, da 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 da. You know, so should we begin, because this show is really about solutions, so should we begin to do that? Should we, as women, say, I'm not going to come into the marriage with and put all my eggs on the table, like, you know, I'm going to keep 2 eggs in a fund somewhere, no. You know, just for a rainy day. But the thing is, if you start off a marriage like that, then how does... Yes. But then if you don't, when it goes, then what do you do?
I think for... most or another aspect of why victims tend to stay in abusive relationships is the idea of hope, because it's very difficult to marry the two individuals that you, on this hand, this
the person you
that,
love,
and then it's very difficult to marry the two, because you know this person, you feel, you believe you know this person, and on some days you believe that maybe there's going to be a change, and sometime, because to be honest, some people to an extent with the right help do change. So then there's that, it's almost like quicksand, you're just in there and you're not sure when to get out. If you make any movement, you sink in deeper. So until you're able to get someone to help you out is the only way you'll be able to know that, okay, this is abuse. You need to first identify that what is going on is abuse. There are people that would probably change.
So
there are
Vanessa,
people too that
wait,
wouldn't.
Wait. So the question that I asked you and the direction that... I don't understand you people.
Please tell us.
So should we put all our... It was a simple question. Should we put all our eggs?
I would say that putting all your... It's... You are... First of all, I'll just... talk about marriage. First of all, marriage is an institution. I'm very big on God. I'm Christian Catholic. Marriage is an institution created by God. It's a perfect institution in which two imperfect individuals come together. To say you're going to save some money for a rainy day would not be, it's not a good way to start.
It's like a prenup.
It's I mean, say a prenup, both individuals are aware of the prenup, but what you are referencing is more like putting something that your partner is unaware of, just in case. Once you're getting into a relationship, a marriage, with that mentality of just in case, what effort are you going to put in to ensure that it works to the best of what marriage is meant to be? You know, there's always going to be that, okay, I have this, so if anything, I'm out. But putting
it's not a bad thing.
It is. It's a, I would say it's a two-sided thing. It is a bad thing and it is a good thing. Now, the concern is, for me, I believe that we should be able to provide resources for persons who find themselves victims of sexual and gender-based violence, so that there wouldn't be that need to have to keep something somewhere just in case. I don't know if I'm making...
No, I totally get you.
Perpetrators, abusers are generally not held accountable. Unfortunately, Africa, the WHO African region, is the highest prevalence, holds the highest prevalence of sexual intimate partner and sexual violence at 33%. Like, can you imagine why? Because of our societal norms, our cultural ideologies, and not creating safe spaces for victims to be able to come out and speak. And we do not hold perpetrators accountable simply because we feel like, oh, maybe you're going to ruin the reputation of this person. Mm-hmm. And most perpetrators, unfortunately, are, to an extent, high-ranking individuals
respected
individuals in our society. So we think that, oh, don't talk about it. But then at what expense? At the expense of the mental, physical, and emotional health of the victim. These are things that we need to look into. So it's all about creating that environment that supports victims so that women and or victims that go into relationships or who experience sexual and gender-based violence do not have to feel like, okay, I need to do this. Yeah. Education is also very important. Counseling is also very important. We enable things a little too much. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you would hear people say that, oh, maybe if your husband slaps you small, or maybe if your wife just ignores you small, it means that she loves you or she wants your attention. We need to break that cycle of toxicity. Mm. We really need to be able to break it. It's important because until we're able to break that mindset, we need to the resources that are available to ensure that this thing comes to a minimum need to work.
Okay.
I am not for keeping something on the side.
No, I get that. Yeah,
simply
no,
because then you're only just going to have that mindset of
I have a way
like,
out.
I have a way
you're
out.
If you're
yes.
So what about you?
So it's
good
and bad.
I'm going to do the gray area too.
Not me. I'm not a gray area. I've chosen
you're
a side.
Outright
there's
don't.
No need
okay.
to put something on the side. I believe that once systems work,
but until the systems are working,
yeah, I get.
I completely get your concern and your worry. I completely do. I really, really do. Okay. I completely do, Melanie. The ball is in your court.
Yeah, until the systems work. Wow.
I know it's a very difficult place to be.
The systems work, what I like to do, mm-hmm. especially with my clients, is empower them.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they've even come forward. Sometimes they've gone as far as reporting to Dove Sue and mm-hmm. all that. But
It really goes back to
the systems,
the failing system or a failed system.
Hence the question: until the systems work,
empower
the women.
Yes,
it's okay. I like the fact that you said, should you put something away? I'm not against that. I feel like even in a relationship, your partner should not be against you empowering yourself.
If that happens, any person that is against you empowering yourself, that's a red flag.
it's a sign you should be cautious of. So put something away. Boldly let them know you are putting something away. You have a corporate job. You can get a side business. Empower yourself.
And save.
Well, I think maybe the idea is not putting something away for a rainy day. It's just to continue to improve yourself and try to decenter yourself from the idea that you need a certain institution to have value of yourself. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, Vanessa.
Melanie, I mean, that is all about the empowering. Yeah. Because
yes,
if you continue to...
About, so should we put money, somewhere?
Anyone, do you want to put money somewhere on us? Let's throw it to you.
No, because I would say that I would tell my daughter when she was getting married, I would make sure that she had... an account, she had deposits, she had savings that was not joint, that was not accessible by anyone else.
Yeah.
Because apart from even things like abuse, your husband could literally just die.
Yeah.
So oh, that's yes. empowerment.
That is empowerment. That's what we are all talking about.
That all sounds nice. It doesn't sound nice.
It's not about putting it away just in case your husband abuses you or your partner
but
abuses you.
But for a rainy
you.
Day.
It's just about empowering yourself so that you'll be able to hold yourself irrespective.
But you see, my argument again is that our society does not have conversations with women like this.
Okay.
When you're going to, when you're getting married, whether it's from the church, or from your parents, is it's the oneness, you know. So you know, do everything together. Or let him know
that
what you have. That is ideal,
concept.
but
the reality, is
especially because of the culture that we live in,
reality.
People's husbands die, and in 2 hours, you know, the family is there. They are taking his clothes, driving, throwing you out of the house.
So it goes back to the system not working.
So it goes
because
back
ID,
to so put
once,
money.
Once you. So let's take what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, if your partner passes, the family would come for everything.
Yeah.
As a wife who is widowed, you should be able to go the legal route because legally it's not supposed to be done. But then the systems do not work.
No.
The systems are not there to help the vulnerable victims to be able to get what is due them.
It's
all about the system, because if people were held accountable for some of these things that are happening, you would barely have it happening. If they knew that, okay, if my wife's husband, who is my brother, passes, maybe the man was a rich man, etc., etc., and I go and take the properties and
you
drive his wife
that.
Out,
yeah,
I would be held
places.
Responsible.
Yeah.
I'll be held accountable for the action that I would do. And so it would, to an extent, deter you from doing that.
Mm. So in the meantime, you know, while the systems are not working, please be siphoning money. Please siphoning money from your rich husband.
Please, no.
Yeah. No, it's just because it's
yes.
so...
Unfortunately, the reality... reality does not... help us
empower yourself
and continue to add value to yourself. That's just what we would say.
Right, okay. Mirabel wants me to read some messages. I didn't realize that we just had like 5 minutes. Okay, Nana Kwesi says, my parents never put their hands on any of their children. You guys married, no one bought or owns anyone. Try that nonsense with my sister and the whole family will come for your head. Whoever that fish is will smell pepper. Wow. Okay, so because
so
of
that
the,
is
can
family.
You, can
yes.
you read it for me? Because
okay,
because of the
so,
microphone.
The second one is, when a child is beaten and pacified with a gift, with the words, I love you, this may be the genesis of some growing up to see beaten or abused as love. Yes. This is from Vincent in Accra, which is what we spoke about. Some of the factors that enable this sort of behavior. Start
to
from
become
the individual,
acceptable.
Family, community, and then the wider society. Yeah. And then, good evening. My advice to the topic is that both sides should be steady and also ask from partners with their angers
where their anger lies
so that
no one will fall to I mean, I get what he's saying.
Yes.
He's talking about, you know, provocation.
Communication.
And, you know, being...
Communication.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But something to note about that statement is they could easily hide it, especially somebody who... A typical abuser, sometimes they have certain personality traits like narcissism. So then they will hide it. It's part of the package, basically. Yeah. So, yes.
So once you start unwrapping, then you'll find
it's like an onion.
Yeah, you'll feel... Okay, so we have 4 minutes. So I'm going to give you guys like a minute each. Just to... I don't know if there's somebody listening who's being abused and feels like, oh, this is love. If you were sitting in front of them, what would you say?
Abuse is not love. Somebody who loves you would not hurt you. And there's help. That's one thing I always preach. There's help. In as much as we are saying the systems are not working, there's help. Dovsu is there. They are doing their best. We have a long way to go, but you can report abuse.
And all of this comes with funding.
Yes.
So we know that the Ministry of Gender and that one, the women's one, is one of the
underfunded, you know, when you do the comparison of how much money they get. And so even from a, sorry, this is just me interrupting, even from a policy point of view, you know, moving forward after the elections, we need people who are in government who will push, you know, agenda, for the agenda, so that women can be safe, so we can have more shelters, more more education, more so
but there are people ready and willing to listen, because Vanessa's made a very key point, which is both the everybody involved needs help. So the perpetrator and the survivor, they both need help, and that help is available. Okay, so don't feel like you need to stay in an abusive relationship. You can get out. Yes, it's difficult. A lot of suggestions have been made. Make a plan. But for me, my first point is get out. Let's help get you that help, that shelter, no matter how bad the condition.
So when you get out, where should you
survive? Go to the doors, to the nearest police station, and report it. They will take your statement. They will report it. There are dovsus in the police
station. And then where do I sleep?
And so that's what I'm saying. So once you report it to dovsu, usually you'll be sent to the hospital. Or even sometimes you'll even be sent to the hospital, and then the doctors would do that referral based on their assessment they see. Yes. And now there are social workers in the various hospitals who would help find those shelters.
Okay.
That I'm talking about.
Okay.
So they are available. They are not many, but they are available.
Okay.
Yes.
So Vanessa, I think you have like 30 seconds.
All right.
Because
she took all the four minutes. So for me, what I would say to someone who finds themselves a victim of sexual and gender-based violence is, I'm sorry you have to go through that. It's not something that any person should have to go through. Yeah. It rips you off your sanity and your dignity. And I'm sorry you have to go through that. It's important that you seek help. Don't stay in that place. Speak to someone, because there are people who are ready to listen. Also, pray for discernment, because it's not everybody that has a listening ear that wishes you well. So find the resources that are available,
and the right
resources. Yes. I mean, in 20